The village is a highly organized machine. We operate very smoothly every week, as you can tell. We're working through the book of 2 Corinthians, and we've been talking a lot about the idea of mission, and we've been talking about how we have a mission and the importance of our mission. We've been talking about the fact that we're ambassadors for God, that we speak for God when we know Him and follow Him, and that that in some ways, in this mess that was this church in Corinth, we kind of also begin to see ourselves and see a lot about who we are. And so Paul has come, if you'll remember, he'd been accused, for those of you who've been here, he'd been accused of having misled the Corinthians and having lied to them, basically. And he was talking about that and kind of wounded by that and defending himself earlier. And so we're kind of going back to that part of the story, and I want to read 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 13. And it says, "As God's fellow workers, we urge you not to receive God's grace in vain. For He says, 'In the time of my favor I heard you, and in the day of salvation I helped you.' I tell you, now is the time of God's favor, now is the day of salvation. We put no stumbling block in anyone's path so that our ministry will not be discredited. Rather, as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way, in great endurance, in troubles, hardships, and distresses, in beatings, imprisonments, riots, in hard work, sleepless nights, and hunger, in purity, understanding, patience, and kindness, in the Holy Spirit, and in sincere love, in truthful speech, and in the power of God, with weapons of righteousness in the right hand and in the left, through glory and dishonor, bad report and good report, genuine, yet regarded as impostors, known, yet regarded as unknown, dying, and yet we live on, beaten, and yet not killed, sorrowful, yet always rejoicing, poor, yet making many rich, having nothing, and yet possessing everything. We have spoken freely to you, Corinthians, and opened wide our hearts to you. We are not withholding our affection from you, but you are withholding yours from us. As a fair exchange, I speak as to my children, open wide your hearts also." Paul starts this passage by talking about not receiving God's grace in vain. That phrase kind of struck me, and I spent a lot of time thinking about how do we receive God's grace, and what does that mean, and what's God's grace all about, and the realization that God's grace comes to us, and that it comes as a gift out of God's generosity. To understand that, you have to kind of understand your status before God. And I think a lot of times this is where I've struggled, because all of my status stuff is always comparative. You notice that? Like, we compare ourselves with each other. We are always comparing ourselves with each other. So I am, like, comparatively the tallest person in this place. Comparatively, probably the fattest person in this place. I am comparatively, genuinely, the biggest person in this place. By comparison, all you people are short. Although I like to think of myself as average, and then you're very short. So, but I'm not really average. See, what happens is we always do that comparison thing. We're constantly comparing ourselves to each other. So we're always evaluating. Am I better? Am I smarter? Am I stronger? Am I tougher? Am I meaner? Am I nastier? Am I nicer? Am I sweeter? Am I kinder? Am I more loving? Am I more generous? We do all that comparison stuff. And so we come to God with that kind of thing. We come to God and we say, well, comparatively, on the average, you know, I'm a pretty good person. On average. You know, I'm not the greatest, I'm sure, you know, there's Mother Teresa and people like that, you know, and I'm never going to measure up to Mother Teresa, but then, you know, I'm not as bad as Hitler. So, hey, you know, it works out pretty good. And somewhere I'm in the middle of that. Like, I'm kind of in the middle of a mess. I'm better than most. And, of course, we always give ourselves the benefit of the doubt, right? Because we are really good compared to most people, because we excuse all the little dark areas of our life. And, you know, we make excuses for those. We have reasons why we do that. You know, we do that because we were hurt, or we were wounded, or because that's something we need, or whatever it is. We have our explanations as to why. And so we really don't understand. If you don't understand that you're a mess before God, and that really you can't do it right and get it right before God, you're really going to have trouble with the whole idea of God's grace and gospel and what God offers you. So if you think tonight that your life is perfect, it's all together, you've got it all nailed, if people would just listen to you, the world would be a much better place. If you've just got your act together and everything is wonderful, you can probably just go on home unless you want to hang out for the pizza later. But if you kind of have some sneaking suspicion that you might be a little bit of a mess, or maybe a real mess, or if people really knew all of your thoughts, a horrible mess. So that's kind of interesting, isn't it? Like, if people really knew what you were thinking, I heard that they've been working on trying to invent this machine that will actually record and then put your thoughts out there on a screen. We're all going to be buying those, right? Because we want to carry one of those around with us. Oh yeah, here's what I'm saying to you. Oh yeah, I really do love that dress. And no, you don't look fat in those jeans and all that kind of stuff. And then our thoughts are really going up here, right? Boy, you look fat in those jeans, you know. And we don't want that. So we're not interested in that machine. But Paul's kind of saying that you have to first understand that you're a mess. And then you have to understand that you've received God's grace. That God's grace comes to you and saves you. God's great promise was that when Adam and Eve sinned, to Adam and Eve at the very beginning, God's great promise was, despite what you've done, despite how screwed up and messed up you are, despite how you've turned your back on me and turned away from me and not followed what I wanted you to do, I'm going to rescue you. He promises that to Israel. And all the way through, and now Paul says, in this moment, in this time, in Jesus, that promise is fulfilled. This is the day of salvation. You've been saved. That's the exciting part that Paul's starting this passage with. So you have to understand that, first of all, grace is a gift of God's generosity. I talk a lot about generosity, and I think a lot about generosity, and I think a lot about being generous, and what that takes, and what that requires, and what that really means often is that I have to lay down things that I long for and want in order, because I want more for others than I want for myself. So that's the idea of God's generosity, that God actually lays down his longing. Jesus comes, lays down his longing to live and not die, lays that longing down for us so that we can live, so that we can truly experience real life. God's grace invaded time and invades our time. So that God's grace is not just available to those people who lived 2,000 years ago, but God's grace is when Jesus was here, but that God's grace is available to us now. That God invades our time and our space and our realm and the world we live in now, the Seneca house, my house, your house, wherever you live, God invades time and space to bring grace to us. God's grace came and it comes to us because he heard us. That's what this passage says. That's exciting. You realize that God's listening in? God's listening in now. He's got his ear down towards us. He's leaning in. He's listening to what I'm saying, to what you're saying. He's listening to us, He listens to our deepest longings. He listens to our deepest desires, our deepest passions. He's listening to us. And he knows our fear of death. He knows our fear of not being loved. He knows our fear of not having impact. He knows all of that because he's listening. And then God's grace comes and came because he wants to help us. God's heart is for us. A lot of times in my life, I thought that God was against me. Maybe you think that way. God's against me. It's simply not true. God is for you. God is for you. He's on your side. He wants, he's passionate about you. He desires you. He's pursuing you. And so Paul says, this grace that invades our time and our space because God heard us and he's for us and he wants us and he's generous to us, that grace, he says, don't receive that in vain. Don't receive that. Now, how can you receive that in vain? Well, you receive it in vain because it just, you choose to not let it matter. This doesn't make any difference in my life. So what? In vain means without any further effect or any further benefit, without any impact on the mission of offering the gospel to the world, receiving it in a way that lessens God's glory. In other words, the longing of God, the desire of God, the passion of God is that we receive this grace and then live it out. I love the passage that says, and I hate the passage that says, to whom much is given, much is asked. Right? It's along that lines. You've been given a lot. God's been generous to you, kind to you. He's loved you. And then you just say, okay, thanks, great. And you just kind of go on with your life. Just keep screwing up, messing up, doing everything wrong. But you don't care. Big deal. No big deal. Who cares? It's not a big, you know, it's nothing. And so, the passion here is Paul's passion for us is that we not receive this grace vainly without further benefit or effect. And then because God's grace is real and evident in our lives, then Paul says, now I want you to live a no obstacles life. I don't want you to put up, Paul says, I haven't put up any obstacles to this grace that's been poured out on me. In other words, I live out of grace, I live out of the grace that I've received, and I don't put up obstacles. So I want you to think a little bit about the obstacles that you might put up. If I say that I'm a follower of Jesus, and that I love Jesus, and I live my life to please Jesus, and I'm greedy, and I'm self-serving, and I'm constantly angry at my wife, and I'm constantly abusing my children and mistreating them, and I'm constantly, then that obviously is an obstacle to people looking at me and saying, oh, so that's why grace is about. I get it. They're looking at me and going, no, you look just like me. Or your works, because we do the whole comparison thing, right? So we have that so one of the huge obstacles is that we live our lives in such a way that people look at us and go, well, if you're what a Christian is, thanks to know that. Someone said the reason most people become Christians is because they know one. And the reason most people do not become Christians is because they don't. Right? Because we have interaction, we look carefully at life. People are watching you all the time, and Paul's understanding that. Paul understands that people are peeking in on him. They're watching his life. They're looking at him. You know what? People are watching you. This beautiful talking little child back here is watching his parents, right? He's observing. He doesn't care what you say, and he's not going to care what you say, right? Those kids sitting in the nursery, the kids sitting over there, they don't care what you say. I mean, they sort of do. They're watching you like a hawk. And they're watching what you you. And they're watching whether your words match up with your deeds. Now, if that doesn't terrify you as a father or a mother, then you're not easily terrified. It always bugs me. Because I've seen the effect of that in my own children, who are adults now, who saw the difference between my words and my actions. I said this, I did this. Parents are real good at do what I say, right? Just do what I say. We're real bad at just do what I do. As a parent from now on, I wonder if you can just say, hey kid, do what I do. Do exactly what I do. If you do what I do, you'll understand God. You'll understand grace. You'll understand the right way. You'll understand the right path. When I was a kid, we'd go to the son's basketball game, and if you were under 12, you could get cheap tickets. And my neighbor up the street would take us to the son's game, and then he would get his kids and my brother and my sister and I, and he'd say, now you guys all say, I know you're 13, and I know you're 14, and you know, but you just tell them that you're 12, so that we can get the cheap price. You know, I can still remember that. And then the guy at the window looked at me and said, you don't look 12, because I always look much older than I am, until recently. And so he kind of, you know, called me out. Like, and then I had to confess that I was 13, and then my neighbor was mad at us. But what kind of lesson did his kids learn, right? His kids and I learned that it's okay as an adult to lie to get a slight advantage in a monetary transaction, right? It's okay to lie. That's what I learned. That's the lesson I learned. Doesn't matter what he told me, that's what I learned. Paul says, don't live your life so that there's no obstacles. Now, Paul's life has also been a mess. When you read through that whole list of stuff, right? I mean, troubles, endurance, beatings, hardships, distresses, imprisonments, riots, hard work, sleepless nights and hunger, all that stuff. People look at our lives sometimes and they go, okay, you're a follower of Jesus, so how come your life is so bad, right? Like, your life should be good. You should have it all together. You should have lots of money. You should have lots of time. You should have lots of energy. You should have lots of strength. You should be charming. You should be good looking. You children should be above average. You know, it's everything should be working perfect. It's sort of that wealth of hey, everything should be working for you. And so Paul's saying that part of having a no obstacle, that this reality, these difficulties that he lives in, this struggle, he can see how that could be an obstacle to people saying, well, you know, Paul, your life isn't really all that great. You know, we're going to follow people who's like, got it together. And I think often that is sort of our tendency, right? We look at our leaders, we look at people, and we kind of want the success ones. We want the people who've got it together. And so even the reality of what happens to us can be an obstacle. It's not an intended obstacle. Like, we don't choose that obstacle. It's just a reality. When we live our lives appropriately and for God and in a correct way, we're going to suffer difficulties. But Paul immediately adds, not after that whole list of difficulties, he also talks about purity, understanding, patience, and kindness in the Holy Spirit and in love. He starts with purity. Purity, in other words, even though other people are engaging in all kinds of sin that's inappropriate, they're lying, cheating, stealing, doing whatever that kind of stuff, Paul says, no, I'm pure, I'm not going to do that. I don't engage in that. I just will not do that. Understanding. that he's aware of and listens to God, as following God. He's patient, that he's patient and he's kind. He waits on God, and that he's kind to others. And then he listens, he's following the Holy Spirit, and he's doing all of this in sincere love, following the Holy Spirit in sincere love. The power of the Spirit, of God's Spirit in us, is that it enables us to do things that we cannot otherwise do. You will not know this until you fully give your life to Jesus, until the Spirit overcomes you, comes into you, and begins to change you from the inside out. Until you truly submit your life to Christ, you cannot really understand the power of the Holy Spirit. Some of the greatest saints that I've known, the most beautiful people that I've known, are just people who've been overpowered by the Spirit of God. And they live, and you know it when you see them. And you know it when you talk to them. And you know it when you hang out with them. There was a lady that, when I was growing up, who was just a saint. She had been in bed with an illness for 7 years, I mean, a horrible illness that she died from. For 7 years, she would lay in bed, and she could never get up. And I would go visit her to pray for her and try to comfort her, offer her kind words. And I would always come home, like, blessed because I'd been in the presence of God. You know, just this beautiful woman who just glowed with Jesus and glowed with the Spirit of God and who blessed me. And finally, being the selfish jerk that I am, I would just go to be blessed and forget. I would forget that I was supposed to be there to bless her, right? I mean, we forget. We get so wrapped up when we're around that kind of godliness. And that's what Paul's saying, that the Spirit just overpowers and the Spirit overcomes. And so, yes, there are difficulties, and those can be a roadblock, but that God's love and God's compassion and God's generosity toward us can also be that roadblock, that God's kindness and all those things can also be the obstacle. God gives us Paul also says in this passage that he's received weapons of righteousness with which to fight. You noticed he had the first part of receiving this grace was in difficulties and in God's love. Now he moves to with weapons, with righteousness and with weapons of righteousness. It's interesting that he stresses weapons of the left hand and weapons of the right hand. Like, what's that about? Because it's just kind of strange. Why would I, you know, do weapons or weapons? I'm studying karate. We learn about weapons. You know, you get the bow and you get the... They're just weapons. And most of the weapons, you realize, are offensive weapons. The whole point of having a weapon is to hurt someone, cause damage. But the reality is most weapons have both defensive and offensive capabilities. And Paul's saying, we receive weapons that are defensive, that shield us, right, that protect us, and then we also have weapons that allow us to go and attack the enemies of God and take on the enemies of God, Satan and his forces. Another obstacle, or that we're kind of... this whole no obstacles life is in difficulties, in God's love, with defensive and offensive weapons, through all the confusing aspects of our circumstances. We measure God's love for us and God's relationship and our relationship with God based on our circumstances. I know, because I talk to people all the time. And you say, God's really for me when things are going pretty good. And then you say, I don't know what happened to God. He's disappeared. God just doesn't care about me when things are going happy. And we measure our relationship with God based on the circumstances of our lives, not on the reality of the promise of the grace of God, but on whatever our circumstances are. So we're constantly either really high, really low, vacillating, or as my buddy says, on the fence, vacillating back and forth. He's got all those cliches about going back and forth, vacillating. We're constantly up and down depending on how the circumstances of our lives are. I want to promise you that if you do not know Jesus and you give your life to Jesus, your circumstances aren't going to get instantly better. And in fact, they'll likely get instantly worse. And you go, oh, well, that's great, Rod. Thanks so much for that. Because I was considering turning my life over to Jesus now. Maybe not so much, you know? Because really, I don't need more trouble. I've got plenty. But the truth is, you will experience, you'll have to make choices you've never had to make before. You'll have to start thinking in ways you've never thought before. You're going to have to change aspects of your life, and that's difficult, and people are going to push back. When I worked at Teen Challenge as a drug and alcohol counselor, these guys would come and they would say, you know, they wanted to get their life together and get their act together and get clean and sober and healthy, and then they wanted to go back to their spouse and they wanted to go back to their family, and they were just so excited because they knew that they were just going to be welcomed in and received and loved. Not so much. The truth was, often their family had a vested interest in them staying drunk or high. And often their divorces happened when they went back, and because now they didn't like this strange new person who was in their house. They liked the old happy drunk that used to live around there, or whatever. There was a vested interest. And so what happens is, when we make this decision, when we choose out of the circumstances of our lives, it's kind of like taking a vow. And when you take a vow, the vow gets tested. God tests our vows. And when we take a vow, Satan goes, hey, you know what? I'm going to mess with you. I'm going to tempt you. I'm going to make sure you know that this isn't all that it's cut up to be. Right? You're going to struggle. It's going to be a mess. It's not going to be all fun and games. And only when you work through that obstacle, the circumstances of your life, and look past the present circumstances, Paul, I love what Paul says, that despite my circumstances, I can take joy and pleasure in the reality of God's. Despite what's happened to me. You know, that's been a hard lesson for me. And when Eric was talking about mission a couple weeks ago, it just nailed me. Like, it really hit me hard about my mission. Because I've allowed this screwed up neck and my sore shoulder and my messed up arm to really, like, dictate that I can't do anything, that I'm helpless, that I'm not able to function anymore. And I kind of bought into that. I bought into that belief. And so it was a real challenge to me to think, okay, now, what does my mission look like? What am I about? What am I supposed to be about? Well, in the last couple of years, I've let myself go horribly, physically. I'm way overweight. I'm just a mess. I can't walk around a block without breathing heavy. You know, it's horrible, you know? And so I thought, well, okay, I can't play golf. I mean, it's legitimate. I can't really play golf with this screwed up arm. And I love basketball. But my basketball days are over because, you know, if the only way you can go is to your right, then, you know, they'll know that that's the only way you can go, and they'll stop you. So my basketball days are over, and I couldn't jump more than a, you know, height of a dime anymore anyway. But basketball, basketball's probably out, you know? But what can I do? Well, I used to study karate, and karate's pretty good, so I was over at a restaurant, and I saw this sensei, and I thought, hey, I'll talk to him, and he said, yeah, Rod, sure, you know, come over, we'll talk. So I told him, I'm not going to be able to use my left hand, I can't do serious punching, I really don't want to take a blow to the neck, so I can't spar. There are limitations, but to change my outlook from what I can't do to what I can do. I really want you to think about that. You know, forget karate and forget just getting in shape. In your spirit, I mean, unless you need to think about that. But from the spiritual aspect, take away what you can't do, what you're not able to do, and concentrate on what you can do, what you do have to offer, what you do bring. A huge change in how we think. The coolest part of this idea of this life-changing, this mission of God to understand and live out the grace that's been given to me, live out of that grace, is to realize that I've been given things of great value. Each of you in this room have been given gifts by God Himself. You have talents, you have abilities, you have skills, you have life experiences, you have relationships. You have things that are so unique to you and make you such a unique and amazing creature of God and a beautiful gift to this community. And as you live out of those gifts and as you live out of those talents and as you live out of those abilities and as you offer yourself to this kingdom, you have a huge impact on bringing grace, the grace of God, to each other and to the world around us. And to do that, Paul says, you need to open wide your heart. I love this part of the passage because in verse 11 he says, we have spoken freely to you, Corinthians, and opened wide our hearts to you. We've spoken freely to you and opened wide our hearts. Paul opens his mouth freely. He speaks openly about his life, and he's not ashamed to share both the good and the bad of his life. Most of us are protectors. We protect our dark side. We protect our secrets. We protect our way of life. We're not truly open and honest. As a matter of fact, if people regularly say to you, I'm just trying to be open and honest, they're lying. That's usually the dead giveaway that they're trying to hide something, okay? Just, that's a little aside to get that for free. No, it's okay. But if people are constantly saying to you, hey, I'm just trying to be open, I'm just trying to be honest, they're not. They're trying to snow you. You don't know how they're trying to snow you, maybe, but they're trying to snow you. The truth is, openness and honesty and about circumstances and about our lives and about our sin and about our struggles and about our pain are the way in which we impact the world around us. When you share your story, the pain of your real story, when you share the shame, the real shame of your life, when you share the sin, the struggles, when you share that with other people, people go, that's strange because that's not how I experience you, right? That's not how I experience you. Eric has stood up here even recently and confessed before us all that he is a liar. And whenever he says that, I go, that's really weird, Eric. Because you know what? You don't lie to me. You tell me the truth. You look me square in the eye and you say it, and sometimes it hurts and it brings tears to your eyes and my eyes, but you've always told me the truth. So when he says to me, I'm a liar, I go, no, Eric, that doesn't make sense. Now, why is that? It's because when I look at Eric, Eric really is a liar. Love you, Eric. But he really is. And Andy's my co-pastor, and I'm just going broke here. So he really is one. But what happens is Jesus comes in, redeems that, rescues that, changes that, and what comes to us is truth. And we go, wow, the thing about Eric is he's a truth teller. He's a truth teller. And then the more he walks into that new identity of telling the truth, of being the truth teller, we go, yeah, Eric. But what it really is that's Jesus in Eric. Okay? So when you share your darkness, when you share your pain, when you share your struggle, people go, you know, I understand that, but that's really not my experience of you. Okay? That's really not my full experience of you. Because what? They see Jesus redeeming that. They see the Spirit changing that. They see it being overcome. You get that? Because that's hugely important. If you don't get that, you're going to hang on to your shame. You're going to hang on to the darkness. You're going to hang on to your tough story. You're going to hang on to all that stuff. And people won't see gospel in you. They won't get it. Paul says, hey, I've opened my heart to you. And I've opened it wide. What you see is what you get. This is me. You don't have to like it. You don't have to love it. It may irritate you. It may annoy you. It may be different than what you hoped for or expected. This is me. This is me. If there's a longing that I have for you people, for you, my people, that I love, it's that you would open wide your hearts. That you would be willing to share your stories with each other, to share them openly, fully, completely, with all your doubt, with all your fear, with all your shame, with all the scariness of that, because then we'll see Jesus in each other. And when we see Jesus, we're going to get all excited. Paul has led by example. He's told his story. He's opened his mouth freely. He opened his own heart wide. Opening your heart means to open your true thoughts and your true feelings without shame. In doing so, Paul enlarges his capacity to love. If you're a stingy lover, if you're stingy about loving other people, the invitation is to open your heart, to open your true thoughts and your true feelings to each other. Now that's high risk. The moment you do that, you could be rejected. Matter of fact, it's likely you'll be rejected. Matter of fact, Satan will make sure you're rejected. You'll get mistreated. People will take advantage. They'll use what they got to gain advantage over you. Sorry. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Paul had offered his heart to the Corinthians, and they took advantage of it. Some people there just said, hey, you know, that Paul, I know he founded this church, but and he's a liar, and he's a mess, and he really doesn't have a place here, and we have credentials, and we're good people, and you know what? We don't live like he does. When you open your heart wide, it has the potential to backfire on you. And the Corinthians, even though Paul has opened his heart wide to them, have refused to reciprocate. And Paul commands them to stop withholding their affection, their pity, and their sympathy. When he says in verse 12, and I love this, he says in verse 12, we are not withholding our affection from you, but you are withholding yours from us. The conversation moves from opening your hearts wide to, I don't know how to do this. This is indelicate. He's saying, so uncramp your bowels. If you translate this in the Greek, in verse 12, he's really saying, uncramp your bowels. Stop withholding your affection. Stop withholding your affection for each other. Uncramp your bowels. Now, I got to thinking a lot about that. I've been laughing about this thing all week, about this whole bowel thing. Because, you know, when you have cramped bowels, right? And you kind of walk around just hoping there's a bathroom somewhere close, and you get more and more miserable. And have you noticed that the more you decide that you can't go to the bathroom because there's no available place, the more you have to go, you know? And then you just, it's just all backing up on you and all that, I mean, literally, you know? And it ain't nice. Now, I know some of you are just horrified that I'm even talking this way, but I didn't write this, you know? It's just the way it is. And so, I don't know how many times, I've talked to you as individually and even in groups with the idea that most of us live out of our heads, and then some of us finally choose to live out of our hearts, but where we truly live is where? Out of our gut, right? We do gut reaction stuff, and we do it so quick we don't even think about it, right? I live out of my gut. Someone challenges my ability to comprehend or understand something difficult, I am back to being a first grader who got told he was stupid and an idiot and didn't belong in class and had to go to a special school because I was blind and I didn't see and I didn't pay attention and I was oblivious. And every teacher who followed that up with, well, Rod just doesn't apply himself, I'm living there. Like, I have no idea what the conversation is anymore. I'm back being that kid. And I live out of that gut reaction. That gut reaction is so quick that I don't even know I've moved there. All of you have gut reaction stuff. Somebody says a word, says a thing a certain way, does something, reacts a certain way, and you're just, boom, you just react. You didn't think about it. Your heart wasn't, oh, this is what I ought to do. No, you just, boom, you reacted. Boom, you're there. It's just, and it's that gut area that Paul's actually, I think, addressing here. He's saying you got to uncramp that. You got to get rid of that crap, okay? You got to get rid of it. You got to take some medicine that will get rid of that. Little side story. When Justin, my oldest son, was about 4 years old, he had a horrible problem with constipation. And he was severely constipated. And we took him to the doctor. And my poor kid is there. And the doctor talks to him for a while, and talks to me for a while, and examines him, and says, okay, you need to put him on a clear foods diet, and I'll order a suppository for him. So I said, okay. So we're walking out to the car, and I'm holding the hand of my little kid, and he says, so, Daddy, what's a clear foods diet? And I said, well, you can eat anything you can look through. So you can look through Jell-O, and you can look through soup broth, and you can look through water. So that's all you get. Oh. And I knew the question was coming. He said, and Dad, what's a suppository? And I said, well, it's like a pill, but it's one that you put in your behind. And he looked at me and he said, Dad, do you think this doctor knows what he's doing, or should we talk to somebody else? Okay? But we need that. We need that. We need to be freed up. We need to let go of those things that put our guts in just a twist. Quite a while ago, Eric and I were talking about what we bring to the village and what we should be bringing to the village, and then what we have such a struggle bringing to the village. And so he asked me to do something. He said, Rod, write down all the things that you hate to do because they just put your gut in a twist, you know, that you just can't stand to do. It was an amazing exercise. And I'd invite you to do that. What are the things that you are just so terrified to go to do, to offer to people around you? What puts your guts in fire? What twists you up? What are those things? Maybe you don't know. So talk to counselors, to each other, to your friends, to the people you can trust, and say, what is it, how do you experience me so that we can get this stuff unbound? Paul says, I want this stuff that's keeping distance between us, I want you to let it go, okay? I want you to drink the stuff that we'll go down and clean this out, okay? I want you to have freedom of not being bound up by your sin, by your struggle. He says, to do that, that's the only way you can really open your heart. If you can't do this, you're not going to be able to fully open your heart. You can partially open it. You can open aspects of it. But you're to really fully live with a heart open, you're going to have to let go of the things that bind you. The anger, the rage, the hate, the stuff that was done to you, the stuff that happened that you hung on to, those things have to be let go of. And then, so Paul says, let go of those things that keep you from having affection for me, affection for each other. So that's the point. The point is, what are the things that keep you from having affection for each other and for the people around you? What are those things? What are the things that keep you from loving people? You say, well, some people are just annoying. Yes, they are. What keeps you from loving? Well, some people just are, they're constantly calling me and bugging me. Yeah, what keeps you from loving? Well, some people have mistreated me and abused me. And what keeps you from loving? You say, well, they don't deserve love. Yeah, I know. Yeah, they don't. What keeps you from loving them? It's not, do you have to have a relationship with them? Notice I'm not saying that. Or I have to engage them constantly. But what's keeping you from truly loving them and wanting them to be different? The last part of this is Paul really saying, get even. He says, as a fair exchange, I speak as to my children, open wide your hearts also. As a fair exchange, get even. I want you to get even with the people that you've been withholding affection. You say, well, good, Rod, thanks. Because I've been waiting for this day. And now I can say, hey, Rod told me I can abuse you and mistreat you and treat you every way that you treated me. Because the pastor said, and he's Rod, and he's 6'8". He's taking karate nowadays. So, but I want you to really get even. And to get even, Paul says it's only fair to give what you've been given. Now, I want to say, I don't want you to give to other people what you've gotten from them. I want you to give to other people what you've gotten from God. Not nearly as much fun. Give what you've been given. What have you been given? Grace. All of your sin is forgiven. Everything that God held against you, gone. Wiped off. Every way that you were mistreated and hurt and abused, every way you were lied to, every time someone, all of that, everything that you've ever done, all the lies you've ever told, all the mistreatment that you've ever done, wiped off. It is nothing happening. Give what you've been given. So think hard about that. What have you been given by God? There's kind of a saying that goes around. I heard it when I was a kid. I still hear it. Paybacks are hell. Paybacks are hell. I had dinner with a couple last night, and I found out that I have been the butt of a long-standing joke. And they thought they pulled this little scam on me many years ago. And they've been talking about it behind my back for 20 years. And I just found out last night. And of course I laughed because it was really funny. I'm not going to tell you because then you'll hold it against me. And I'm running out of time anyway. But the truth is, it was a really great moment. And then I said, well, paybacks are hell. Because I'm going to get even. You know, it's you can't play a joke on me like this and not have it come back. And I know how to play jokes, and I've got a long memory. And it could take forever, but I'm going to get even with Bill Van Groningen and his sister, just so you know. And my brother Mark, oh, he's going to suffer. And so it's that kind of deal, right? Paybacks are hell. The truth is, paybacks are heaven. Whatever's been done to you, open your heart in such a way that you will allow for the grace of God to work in other people. Especially your enemies. Especially the ones who mistreated you. Especially the ones who tried to destroy you. Allow, pray for, beg God for His grace. His grace to change their lives like you changed. Like you changed. Now that's hard. That's the toughest battle we ever fight. To pay back not evil for you. Grace. Let's pray. Father, thank you that you've given us Paul's example of opening wide the heart. Help us to open our hearts. Open our hearts to each other. Open our hearts to you. Open our hearts to the reality of grace. And to believe way down in God that your grace is not only sufficient for us, it's sufficient for those who mistreated us, who abused us, who hurt us, who made us angry, who we despise, who we vowed to never go near again, who we're so afraid we'll meet. Father, allow us to allow you to give your grace. Those who don't deserve it, like you've given it.